Good morning. It is Thursday, April the 5th of 2018, and you have tuned in to The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY. I'm Jack, and that is Jim across from me. And good morning, Jim.
Good morning. It's the first Thursday in April.
Mm-hmm. And April showers have arrived.
And you know what that means? May flowers.
I know.
Oh, and, isn't that just so cute?
I've heard that before.
What?
We have three guests in the studio this morning. We'll be talking about William Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, performed here in Sandpoint. Co-directors Jeremy and Sky Campbell and producer Maddie Elliott from the Unknown Locals returning triumphantly to the studio. But first, should we talk a little bit about the weather? Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know if there's... How about just wet?
It is, yes. The forecast is for...
Wet.
Wet. Today, 100% chance of rain. It is currently raining. I can testify to that. And it is 44 degrees is our high today, low down to 32 degrees. So tonight's rain could become tonight's snow. Then tomorrow, chance of rain, then slight chance of rain during the day on Friday with another high near 44 degrees. Slight chance of rain on Friday night. A 100% chance of rain on Saturday. Showers and breezy is the forecast with a high of 48 degrees. Low down to just 42 degrees on Saturday night with a 70% chance of precipitation overnight. Showers and breezy again on Sunday, but a slightly higher high temperature, 51 degrees. And clearing up as Sunday moves into Monday with mostly cloudy currently forecast for Monday.
And I like that definiteness of that one part that you said 100%. It
yes.
wasn't a trace or likely or a possibility or a chance.
No. If there's actually raindrops on my head already, I can say
100%.
Yes.
I love that surety and guarantee.
Yeah. Jim, so let's see. Nothing new in the sporting news.
Break my heart.
I'm sorry.
I am still glowing from... the Notre Dame women were in Spokane and won the regional two weekends ago. And this past weekend, with two incredible last-minute shots in two games, they defeated UConn and Mississippi State to win the national championship. So I'm still glowing green.
Yeah.
I'm sort of radioactive.
I didn't actually watch the games. They were close?
Well, incredibly. One shot won the game and one shot put it... they both won the game. You can go to YouTube. Go to YouTube and just type in Notre Dame UConn. But I think we're sort of like moving away from the reason why we have Jeremiah and Scott and Madeline here.
Yes. And why don't we transition into that? We have...
Because I could talk about Notre Dame for the hour, Notre Dame women basketball. But good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming through the wet and into the dry of our studio. And Sky and Jeremiah are co-directors of Shakespeare's Twelfth Night.
That is correct.
Okay. And Maddie, you are this sort of...
Producer is what
this sort
we
of
call
vague
it.
Position.
The producer kind of is more behind the scenes, do a lot of the promotional stuff and, making sure that we get posters and programs and making sure that they have all of the materials that they need and sets and costumes and kind of just facilitating and supporting them in whatever way we can.
So if Sky or Jeremiah scream out, water, I need water. You're right there with water for them?
Well,
it depends on how close the water is.
Right. My bottle is empty.
Theoretically speaking, sure. I haven't actually been like present and on site for a lot of the rehearsals for this one, which is a big change for me. They've been...
Because you're usually the director.
Oftentimes, yes. Yeah. So they've really... been the ones in charge with this one, and they've taken the reins and been running everything and pulling everything together, and they're doing a really fantastic job, and I'm really excited.
Now, is this your first time directing Sky and Jeremiah, or?
Well, we've directed smaller projects before at the Little Panada. We did some dinner theaters a couple years ago, but this is the largest production we've attempted to direct.
Do you mean length of play or number of people or both?
All of the above, yeah.
All of those things.
Just in general, there's a lot of music, there's a lot of actors, and so it's just overall a much larger project.
Isn't it fun trying to organize so many people's schedules? Yes. That's my favorite part.
Notice the tone of Madeline's voice. Isn't it fun? How did you end up choosing Twelfth Night?
Well, it's one of my first major experiences with Shakespeare, and so I've always had a special place in my heart for it. And honestly, I've been wanting to do it ever since I met Skye, because I thought she'd be the perfect Viola. And so I've just sort of always had it on the back burner of plays I wanted to do eventually. And I don't know, right now just seemed the right time to do it.
And is it, you're going to jump in,
I was
Madeline.
Just going to say, apparently one of Unknown Local's goals here is to fulfill Jeremiah's theater aspirations, because we did Hamlet because of him also last year.
So have you worked with Shakespeare before? Obviously Hamlet, and any other play?
Actually, we met doing Shakespeare classes at the Music Conservatory in Sandpoint. It was probably 6-7 years ago. But yeah, Shakespeare's kind of been a background. I know Jeremiah was pretty much born doing Shakespeare. I think he came out of the womb just reciting Hamlet.
Serious man there.
Yeah, it comes when your dad is an English teacher.
So. He specializes in medieval poetry and literature and things like that. So, yeah.
Chaucer, Shakespeare fan.
Yeah. So could you talk a little bit about Twelfth Night? Obviously, Hamlet and Macbeth are two of the classic tragedies. A little overview of the play itself.
Oh, it's like the most impossible play to overview.
And why would that be?
Well, Shakespeare has this thing with plot twists especially, but in particular, Twelfth Night is all about confusion of identities. So, for example, my character, Viola, has a twin brother named Sebastian. They start out in the beginning of the play. And Sebastian disappears for a while, and Viola pretends to be her brother. And so you've already got one switcheroo right there. And then for the rest of the play, all the other characters proceed to confuse them interchangeably back and forth.
And fall in love with them.
Yes. So there's an awful lot of love going on.
But not with who you think you're falling in love with.
Yes, so it's almost, Shakespeare has coined that traditional idea of the love triangle, in that one person is in love with the other, and then this third person is in love with them, but of course the person they're in love with is in love with that second person. And so, I mean, at the end, Shakespeare's pretty good at just tacking on a bow, and it all ends up happy for once, which is a
rare.
Good thing about a Shakespeare comedy, especially. But yeah, so in between there, there's a bunch of knots.
Well, one of the, I like the play. It's one of my favorite of the comedies. What I like about it is that it's just not a love triangle, but it's when you take on the identity of your brother and you're really a woman, but the man who really loves you can't fall in love with you because you're a guy. And there's a lot of gender bending, isn't there?
There is. And so we've had a lot of fun with that. Because we've got an interesting cast. We've got women playing men. We've got more than just me. We have another lady is actually playing Sebastian. And so we've taken that and we've really tried to explore it more fully than just time for some jokes.
It's a lot of fun. Can you talk about the number of people in the cast and how many numbers?
What is it like?
I think our total is 14.
That's a lot.
14 actors. Most of them are fairly large roles. Twelfth Night is spaced out really well when it comes to characterization. And then we have, of course, our tech people and our people who built our sets too.
First of all, it's at the Heartwood Center.
Yes.
And when is it going to be performed?
The 6th, 7th, 13th, and 14th. Doors at 6:30, show at 7:00, And then we also have a Sunday matinee on the 8th with doors at 2:30 and the show at 3.
And it's not set in the, or I mean, it's the original Shakespearean language, but it's not set in Shakespearean time.
Yes, we decided to move it forward in time, just not all the way. So Twelfth Night is a post-war setting to begin with in the story. And so we thought it would be interesting if we moved it to post-World War II, 1946.
Cool. And that's, I imagine, some costuming involved and stuff like that.
Yes, although much easier than Elizabethan Shakespeare would have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, so saith the producer.
Some different costuming and different music, and we thought it just might be a little bit more accessible, because there's a certain amount of alienation I feel some people get when they see those like classic medieval tights and people hopping around in those, and I wanted to make sure that everyone was able to connect with it. And I thought if we moved the period, they might not take in some of their previous expectations for Shakespeare with them, because I feel there's a certain amount of, you know, a big serious drama thought of when you're talking about Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And people have a hard time just listening to it and actually finding the humanity and the humor, especially in the words. And I thought if we moved it closer to now, we'd be able to more identify with it.
Yeah. Have you made any changes to the script at all? I mean, is it, so I know when you guys performed Macbeth, that you kind of have to abridge it a little bit to get people to sit through the whole thing. Is this has this been abridged at all, or is this the full script? I don't actually know how long Twelfth Night is.
This is a cut version, but it was very hard to cut because everything is so well balanced between everyone that if you start cutting too much, you lose a lot of great stuff.
There's so many intersecting plot lines with it that overlap, and the characters all kind of relate in different ways, and I think that that would make it challenging also.
Exactly, because it's not like Hamlet or Macbeth where you have to keep that main character in focus the whole time, and everything else can be cut around a fair amount. But with Twelfth Night, you have to give everyone their dues. And so we've still cut like at least a half an hour out of the play, I think. But yeah, it was a fun and difficult process to find what we could take.
Mm-hmm. Is this a play with an intermission?
Yes.
Yeah, one intermission, two acts, or I mean two halves.
Yes. Whatever.
Yeah, two periods. The Heartwood Center is once again hosting the Unknown Locals.
It is.
That relationship continues.
Continues, yes.
Yeah, good. You mentioned the original music earlier, or that the music has changed and the composer is present, yes?
Yes. So I composed an original score for Twelfth Night. Shakespeare was really, really good at lyrics, but most, or if not all, of the music he used is vanished, essentially. It's very difficult to find what they might have sang in the past, aside from one or two folk pieces he stole from the public. And because we were also moving the play to the 40s, I figured that we needed to give a big upgrade. Because Twelfth Night has multiple musical pieces, I almost wonder sometimes if it's one of the most musical of his plays. But yes, so first I dove into 1940s jazz-esque music and then progressed from there. And we are very, very lucky to have multiple singers and musicians in our cast. So I sing, I know a good handful of other people sing. We've got a wonderful guitarist, violinist, I play piano. So it's essentially, in some ways it starts to feel like a music circle because we have so many different talents coming together.
Yeah. I didn't really know Shakespeare was a I mean, any of the plays had music in them at all. Of course, he's a poet, but yes. I didn't know any of them were musical lyrics.
Yeah, so it's interesting because you'll read through Shakespeare, and because he's so poetic already with a lot of his prose, with his couplets, you'll get to a song, and it just feels like a very beautifully written poem. And because we don't have the music from most of his pieces, that's how it kind of stays on the page. But then especially when we got into directing this, we were like, oh my, we can't just recite these things. These are actual musical pieces that people have. One of the characters is Festy the Jester, and his role essentially is as a musician player to the noble characters in the play. And so it was interesting. It was almost like starting from scratch, but we had one of the hardest parts behind us was the lyrics. So at least that part was figured out for us, thanks to the bard.
We're in conversation right now with Jeremiah and Sky Campbell, co-directors of Twelfth Night at the Heartwood Center this weekend and next weekend, as well as Maddie Elliott, the producer of the play. How did this thing come together? Did you guys decide you wanted to do it and approach Maddie, or did Maddie, were you guys?
Yeah, no, they did. They kind of came to me and said, hey, we want to do this play, and we were wondering if you could help us out. And we talked about what exactly that looked like and how we could make it happen, and it just came together, at least for me, very simply. They did have a lot of things already together. They had a lot of their cast selected and had the ideas that they wanted to kind of bring to life with the show and things. So
what are some of the challenges of putting on a Shakespeare play? You mentioned earlier, Jeremiah, about Shakespeare. You just say that word and there's a lot of baggage that people bring with it. Like, oh my God, that's so many years ago, or the language is, or it doesn't speak to me now. So how is it to put on a Shakespeare production, especially, well, for two, you know, you bring it up date to the 1940s. And also, as you were talking, Sky, I was thinking of back in Shakespeare time, all of the roles were played by men. And wow, you know, I mean, to think this is a play about changing identities, people falling in love, and but what are some of the challenges of bringing Shakespeare to Sandpoint?
The first thing I think is always you want to make sure that your actors, well, they know what they're saying, and I find that that's always the hardest part whenever doing Shakespeare, is that it's really funny and it's has a lot of humanity in the words, but as you say, people bring their baggage with them, and I think they almost switch their brain to a different mode. And my main priority is to get people so that the actors understand what they're saying, so that the audience, when they hear them, connect with the actors and understand them, so that they can get these beautiful and really hilarious words.
There's a certain amount of translation that's necessary when you're doing Shakespeare, and it's important that the actors are able to kind of translate that for the audience.
Yes, but I mean, there's several words we've had to change just because they've gone out of style in the past.
They mean something different now.
Or they mean something very, very different, or they're so completely separated from what we would call an item today that if you were to say it on stage, everyone would just be like, what? Can you repeat that? Mm-hmm. But then even with some of the words that you can understand, another big important thing that connects with the actors understanding what they're saying is Shakespeare is very visual as well. And I think that's one reason why putting on a production is better than just reading the play, because there's so many of the words are connected to things that people are doing, or especially in the case of a comedy, there is an awful lot of visual humor that Shakespeare was planning for. I think that a lot of it he had in mind, but it doesn't always make it into the scripts. And so we've had to do a lot of piecing together of what was happening here at the time, looking at other productions as well, because his stage directions tend to be minimal, especially in his plays. It'll say exit, enter, and once or twice it'll say they sing. And so beyond that, we've had to go, okay, well, here's what you're saying. Understand that. Now let's piece together what he actually wanted us to be doing. And what we'd like to do as well, in addition to that, to update the play, to make it more enjoyable for our modern audience.
And wouldn't you agree that Shakespeare is meant to be seen, not read? The first time I saw Romeo and Juliet, I had read the play several times, but my Romeo sounded like my Juliet in my head. And that was a real problem. And that we have a tendency to forget that these are works of art to be seen, not to be read.
Yes, because they are stage productions. I know a lot of people's exposure to Shakespeare, if they don't have the opportunity to see a production near them, tends to be maybe through a high school class or reading it. But I'd say we've had the opportunity to see some wonderful productions throughout the area and also in London and even Stratford-upon-Avon. And it's incredible how much easier it becomes to understand the language when you're able to see somebody expressing it. Because even if the words were hard to understand, if you're seeing a good actor communicating emotionally, even if you don't get that one word or that particular phrasing is unfamiliar, you can understand, oh, this person is joking. Oh, this person is sad. And so it makes it so much easier to connect to the people on stage.
Okay, we're here with Jeremiah and Sky Campbell and Madeline Elliott from Unknown Locals about the upcoming production of Shakespeare's Twelfth Night on the 6th and the 7th. That is tomorrow and Saturday, and then a week hence, the 13th and 14th. And we'll come back after we play a song because we need to talk about where are you now in the production and what's happening and that sort of thing. I'm always fascinated about the process, not the product sometimes. We got a song here that was released on this date, April 5th in 1968. I'm not going to say what the name of it is. You're going to recognize it right off the bat. Not because of the song itself, but because of a movie it's related to.
Thanks for listening to the KRFY Morning Show. For copyright reasons, we can't reproduce protected music on the podcast edition of The Morning Show. But feel free to tune in live at 8 a.m. at 88.5 on your radio dial, or listen anywhere in the world by streaming us through our website, krfy.org. If you listen live, you can hear the full program, including musical breaks. While you're visiting krfy.org, consider tapping that donate button and help keep KRFY providing unique quality radio in North Idaho. Thanks for your support. We now return to the show.
Of course, that is Mrs. Robinson from Mike Nichols' The Graduate. This is a song that was released by Simon and Garfunkel on this date in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about that is that this song could not be nominated for Best Song that year because it was not written specifically for the movie.
Sure. I've heard that. It was going to be Mrs. Roosevelt,
right? Mrs. Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It was going to be Mrs. Roosevelt. And Mike Nichols had asked Simon and Garfunkel to write a couple songs, and they wrote a couple songs, and he didn't like either. And they said, oh, we've got one that we could say Robinson with. And bam. And the other thing I like about is the use of Joe DiMaggio. Where have you gone, Jolton Joe? It didn't have enough syllables for Mickey Mantle.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to go with DiMaggio, and that sounds much more fluid and poetic, doesn't it?
I think so. Yeah, it's a good name for it.
And it's a good movie.
Yes, I haven't seen that in too long. I hope it holds up.
I think it does. We're here with Jeremiah Campbell, Sky Campbell, and Madeline Elliott from the Unknown Locals. Let's go over one more time the who, what, where, and why, and how much, and for the upcoming production of Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, and then let's go back and talk about the production.
Okay. So we have performances the 6th, 7th, 8th, 13th, and 14th. The evening performances on Friday and Saturday start at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30. We also, this time, very exciting, have a matinee on the 8th.
What time?
Is at 3 p.m. Doors will open at 2:30 for that. All of the performances will be at the Heartwood Center. We have a beautiful set there. I'm so excited about the set. And we have tickets available at Eve's Leaves, and we have a new ticket outlet this time as well at La Chic Boutique.
Now, over where's there. That?
That is right down there.
They're pointing. Did everyone pick that up?
I think it's on 3rd, maybe? Oak Street? I'm not sure. Main Street.
Okay, Main sounds right.
Yes. Main and First?
Main and First. It's kind of between First and Second.
It's where El Pedro's. No, it's...
It's that same street.
It's by where Truby's used to be.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
Just walk around downtown and look around. You'll figure it out.
Sorry, Justine. I need your address. I'll look it up, I promise.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of address, the Heartwood Center is...
On Oak Street.
615 Oak Street.
There you go.
That one I know. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And we do have tickets available in advance from both of those locations. They are $12 for students and seniors and $14 for general admission.
How about at the door?
They are available at the door so far, although this could be a very full audience. So I would recommend getting your tickets in advance because I can't promise that I'll have them at the door.
So again, this Friday and Saturday at
7 p.m. Doors at 6:30.
And then a matinee on the 8th at
3 p.m. Doors at 2:30.
And then the 13th and 14th.
Also at 7 p.m. Doors at 6:30.
Okay. Where are you at now? I'm talking to the directors, Jeremiah and Sky. Where are you now in terms of the production?
We're having our first full run-throughs and dress and got all our sound and set together right now. So just trying to put all these pieces together and
finishing touches.
All the finishing touches and get it into a cohesive whole.
Tightening up the pacing, tightening up all of the little things to
this have is the producer speaking, who sometimes is the director.
Sometimes. Not this time.
Now, how
very
long,
exciting.
How long have you been doing reading throughs and that sort of thing?
Well, we had our first read through in January, fairly early on, and then we had other actors in another Unknown Locals production, and so we didn't really start rehearsing and acting together until February. So a little over 2 months. February is always a short month, so it feels like it just sort of flew by, and then we were just in March.
How is it to memorize Shakespeare?
Usually it's really hard. But one good thing that comes from having so many well-balanced characters in Twelfth Night is that you don't have that one or two actors who have to memorize a book.
Five-page soliloquies.
Yeah. So we have been really pleased with our cast about memorization because I think we had one or two actors. We gave them the script. We said, come back in February. If you guys are mostly memorized, it'll be great. And a good portion of them did.
Oh, wonderful.
And it was amazing because then we were able to jump right in to let's do blocking, let's move around, and we didn't have to be hindered by these giant books full of words.
Several of them have done Shakespeare before also, and that helps, I think, to have a little bit of experience with it.
Well, I was going to ask about that. What is the level of experience with the cast? And are any of them totally new to Shakespeare or new to acting? Or
we have a couple new actors. I think one of our actors has never been on stage before. Another one has never been on stage before, but has helped an awful lot with makeup and backstage help. And so this is the first time we just sort of pushed them out and went, well, now they can see you. But for the most part, everyone else in the cast has had experience with theater, and a good half of them, I'd say, have done Shakespeare before, either Unknown Locals productions or other productions in the Spokane, Coeur d'Alene area.
Did you have any questions? Were there any stumbles from the actors who hadn't done Shakespeare with figuring out the language and what, you know, the...
Surprisingly not, which has been really good. I mean, we spent a lot of time with discussions about characterization and if there was a word we didn't understand, especially in the beginning, it'd be like, all right, let's stop, let's go let's go get Google. Mm-hmm. Let's figure this out. And a lot of our actors, too, did an awful lot of research on their own when it came to Shakespeare and putting on the play. And so they were able to bring a lot to us as well when it came to putting on the show.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just the enthusiasm of the cast in general, this whole production has just been really amazing and has really helped keep the energy up for this entire production, because like they have given us so much, because there's always the worry before you start a show that something's not going to work out or somebody's not fully going to commit to it. And just everyone has really brought their best to the table, and it's really added a lot to the show.
It looks very fun. You guys always look like you're having a really good time. We have a trailer up on our Unknown Locals Facebook page of the cast during their rehearsals and everything. And if you have a chance, please go and watch that video, because it's very funny. It's really fun. And you can definitely tell how engaged they all are and how much fun they're having.
You go to Unknown Locals on Facebook.
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to know, rather than this being just a one weekend dealy, what do you do between that Sunday matinee and then the 13th? Do you do more rehearsing or do
sleep?
Okay. Does anything go on in that week?
Generally, we'll have one pickup rehearsal sometime in the middle of the week, just before these shows come back at the weekend, just so that we can run everything, make sure nobody had amnesia. but usually, because everyone's done it, I mean, at this point, it'll have been three times over the weekend. And then also we have our dress rehearsal tonight. That coming back isn't such a huge step. It's more like people getting rested, making sure they don't get sick. And then when we do that pickup rehearsal, we just jump right in on it and treat it like a show.
Do you have any stand-ins? Because, you know, when you just mentioned it, Sky, you know, there's so many bugs going around and things like that, flu and whatever. If someone got sick, wouldn't that be... not fun?
No, we won't talk about that.
Okay, that's almost like breaking a leg, right?
Here it'd be like, it would literally be like pushing someone off the stage. We rely so much on our actors. But I also know that if some emergency were to happen, I have faith that we could figure something out for our cast.
Okay. And talk about the cast for a moment. 14, what's the breakdown in terms of gender?
Shakespeare didn't tend to write too many women into his plays. I know Twelfth Night has several. And then we also have, let's see, I think we have the two main women roles, and then we had more actors that we... Three? Oh. Yes, three. My brain is gone. So there's three main women roles in Twelfth Night, but then we also have, I think, two or three more that we have put into the production in roles that might have traditionally been played by men. Just because since Shakespeare was so good at having men play all the roles, we figured why not switch it the other way around.
What are the characters? What's the relationship? You kind of gave the overview of the play before, but...
So you have the two twins, Sebastian and Viola, both played by women in this case. And then you also have Olivia, the main female lead / love interest. You have Duke Orsino, the count who Viola falls in love with, but he decides he thinks he needs Olivia. You also have a great comedic group of
fools.
They're fools. They're drunken rogues. But
Sir Toby, Festa,
Festy the jester, Andrew Akichik, mm-hmm. he's beyond a fool. You also have Fabian, and so they are this group of very entertaining individuals. And then we throw Mariah, Olivia's lady-in-waiting / maid, into the mix. And so I think a good deal of the comedy kind of comes from this amazing group of people just being amazing on stage.
Drinking and fooling around and singing and dancing.
And yeah.
How many people behind the scenes in terms of set building, makeup, costumes?
I handled a lot of the costume design for the production, and we had a lot of people bringing stuff in. A good thing about the 40s, especially for the men, is that a lot of the suits and things with some slight variations tend to be easier to find for us. But then we also have some of our actors who are not on stage all the time are helping backstage. We have two amazing tech people who were very ready to jump into the production. One of them is, I don't even think she's 13 yet. I don't, but
child labor.
It's when you have siblings in the theater, you end up just dragging them in.
Using them. Not being underpaid.
But yes, so
we'll feed you supper tonight if you
ice cream.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we have one person backstage who helps with the curtain, with the lights. We have another person out on the floor who runs all the other lights. And then we got immensely lucky. One of our cast members who plays Mariah had a family member who is a carpenter and had experience with set building. And so when we started to say, oh, who can we get to create our idea of our set? They were immensely helpful at just jumping right out there and being like, I have the labor. Show me what you want and we'll make it happen.
Cool. What's the age range of your cast?
I think our youngest, our 17 is our youngest, just not quite out of high school.
Yeah.
Traditionally, a lot of the roles, aside from, say, Viola and Sebastian, are people in their late 20s, 30s, into 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Toby Belch is usually an older man. Mm-hmm. Our cast is primarily, for the most part, around 40 and under, but most of the main characters are between 70, between 17 and 25, for the most part, aside from two or three people.
Yeah, which is a younger cast, especially for productions in our area.
Yes.
I think we usually, usually seems like we see an older
skew. Yes, a lot of us apparently are approaching middle age.
It happens. I know Jeremiah and I are almost 22. But
oh no.
Yeah.
These jeans I'm wearing, I think, are older than 20. Yeah,
we're feeling it. No, it's been really great working with a lot of younger people who, especially once you get out of high school, sometimes it feels like there aren't necessarily as many performance opportunities, even with music or theater. And so it was kind of nice to get this good mix of people. We have one or two oldies, I hesitate with the word, and then we have several people who are just barely starting out there.
I have a question for Madeline with the unknown locals. Here you have a performance of a Shakespeare play set in the 40s. What happens to all, like Sky was talking about, the costumes? What happens to all of them? Does the unknown locals, do they have a storage locker or unit that says, or do these all just disappear?
As a matter of fact, we do have a storage shed that we keep a lot of things in. Oftentimes when we do productions and stuff, it is things that people kind of bring themselves, or things that they hunt down in thrift stores. And sometimes they take those things home afterward, they want to repurpose them or use them for other things. And I'm always very encouraging of that because, it fits them. It was, their sort of character kind of memento thing. But there are oftentimes a lot of things that are left over afterward that I get to take home with me. So we do have kind of random bits and pieces from several plays.
Okay. So not necessarily every time you put on a production, you're starting from scratch.
No. For example, when we did Walden last year, everybody kind of came up with their own stuff. And, they hit the thrift stores and they got a couple of things, but everybody took their stuff with them afterward because it was theirs. And I think that's kind of a neat thing that they then can repurpose. I know that Seneca had gotten a suit for Walden, and he's wearing it for this one because he didn't end up getting to wear it in Walden.
Lovely suit. And we were so glad that he just showed up one day in it, and we went, ah, this is it. This is the thing. Yes.
The lovely wool suit is probably about this right time period. And he said he got it for $20. He said it's probably been $20 its whole life.
Well, we're running low on time here. The time, it does fly. Do you want to, any of you name the actual everyone in the cast if put on the spot? Do you think you know all 14? In alphabetical
Someone
order.
Should be
in alphabetical order.
No, not in alphabetical order.
Well, never mind. No. So you have Sky Campbell as Viola, Jeremiah Campbell as Duke Orsino, Alyssa Hersey as Olivia, Nate Hersey as Malvolio, Corey Repass as Sir Toby Belch, Burke Palmer as... I've got a little cheat right here. Burke Palmer as Sir Andrew Aguecheek, Lucy Bigley as Sebastian, Devin Chamberlain as Antonio, Myla McKechnie as Mariah, Seneca Cummings as Fabian, Michael Bigley as Captain, Gabe Palmer as Valentino, Destiny Warren as Servant and Ensemble, and a wonderful helper backstage.
That's there's some familiar names in there.
I counted 13.
Yeah. Oh, no. I've missed Festy the Jester. Oh. Samuel Richardson as Festy the Jester.
Festy the Jester.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
We said I'm just throwing an extra R there.
I feel like if you put a little bit of an accent on it, though, it rhymes. Festy the Jester.
Well, good work. Thanks for listing that. I didn't want you to list like 8 and leave out, you know, a few members of the cast.
Somebody would have talked to me after.
Exactly.
Like, hey.
Yeah.
No, we do have a lot of familiar faces, a lot of people that we've worked with before, but there are a lot of new people, at least for me. I know you two have worked with many of them before.
I think everybody in the cast we have worked with in some capacity, either with smaller things with some of our younger cast members or in other productions. And so we felt fairly confident going in that we knew these people could do work.
But for Sandpoint, there will be some new faces.
Yes, it'll be very nice to bring in a few different people.
Okay. And some old favorites.
Absolutely. We want to thank Madeline Elliott from Unknown Locals and the producer of Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, and thank Jeremiah and Sky Campbell for directing and bringing Shakespeare to the Heartwood Center.
Thank you for having us.
And that's once again this Friday and Saturday, 6th and 7th at 7:30.
7 p.m. Doors at
6:30.
This one's a little different because it's a little longer. Most of our plays are at 7:30. Okay. That's confusing.
And a matinee at
3 p.m. Doors at 2:30.
On the 8th. And then the same times on the 13th and 14th.
Yes. Evening performances at 7 p.m. Doors at 6:30.
As we always say, as performers from plays exit our station, break a leg.
Thank you.
Have a good one, and we're going to tune into a song now. On this date in 1994, Kurt Cobain from Nirvana, his body was found, and I thought we'd do a song in tribute to him. Here is Where Did You Spend the Night from his Nirvana's MTV Unplugged, and this is a Lead Belly song.
The KRFY Morning Show is available as a free download at krfy.org. You can also stream Panhandle Community Radio live from the website and find program schedules and more information about the station. While browsing krfy.org, support the station by clicking the Donate button on the right side of your screen and help keep Panhandle Community Radio commercial-free and a growing community resource.
That is Nirvana, Where Did You Sleep Last Night, doing a cover of a Lead Belly song on MTV Unplugged. Kurt Cobain, on this date, April 5th, 1994, committed suicide. And I thought it'd be, rather than playing Smells Like Teen Spirit or Come As You Are, something different.
Yeah. Well, it's a somber occasion, but quite a band. Good song. Nice choice.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Let's go into community events, and I'll start off with tonight at the Panada Theater at 7:30, and then tomorrow night at 5:30, and Saturday night at 7:30. It is the movie, a documentary called Bombshell, the Hedy Lamarr story.
Who I was reading a little bit. I mean, she's like a movie star who invented, who was also an inventor.
Can I read a little bit of biography? Because, you know, most people, a beautiful face. The story behind Hedy Lamarr is when Nazi U-boats torpedo a ship carrying 83 school children during World War II, Hollywood movie star Hedy Lamarr decides to exact revenge. At night, after shooting her scenes on set, she works on a secret radio system that will allow the Allies to torpedo Nazi U-boats with deadly accuracy. This is a woman who was once described the most beautiful woman in the world and starred alongside Spencer Tracy, Jimmy Stewart, and Clark Gable, for example. She invented a wireless form of communication called frequency hopping that revolutionized mobile communications all over the world.
Hmm.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. So it's Bombshell, the Hedy Lamarr story, tonight, Friday, and Saturday at the Panada Theater. I'd highly recommend. Oftentimes, we are surprised in life, and I think this movie will be an incredible... It's a documentary.
Yeah, it does sound like an interesting story.
And on Rotten Tomatoes, it got a 96% with movie critics and a 91% with audience. That's pretty much really good.
Yeah. It is, let's see, so that's tonight.
That is tonight, Friday, and Saturday.
There's a TAP takeover at the Idaho Poor Authority. The Friends of Scotchman Peaks Winter Tracks Volunteer Appreciation Party begins at 5 p.m. tomorrow, or tonight. No, I'm sorry. Did I say tonight? I meant last night. So I hope you guys had fun. Good work, Scotchman Peaks Winter Tracks Volunteers. Tonight being the 5th, we can safely say that it's a Pints Up and Beer Release Party at McDuff's Beer Hall. April is Idaho Craft Beer Month with Idaho Brewers United. So McDuff's Beer Hall celebrates with a Pints Up and Beer Release Party. It's at 5:30 p.m. McDuff's is tapping a special Pro-Am brewed India Black Lager from their First Avenue Pilot Brewery. It's non-smoking, but 21 years of age and older. Please go to McDuff's.com for more information about that. Tonight, Bro Dad's stand-up comedy, Harry J. Riley and Phil Kabczynski,
What was that last name?
I once knew how to pronounce that last name. I've had to pronounce it before, but I have. We're going to say
they've
Kabczynski.
Been here before. They've been here before.
They return to the Panada Little Theater for a hilarious night of stand-up comedy starting at 7:30 p.m. tonight. The show is rated PG-13. Panada.org for more information about that. You already mentioned Bombshell. Big Something is the band that's coming to town, and they will be here tonight and tomorrow. If you missed Big Something last year, here's another chance. It's a jam band performing at The Hive. That's at 207 North First Avenue. A six-piece powerhouse with a sound that is both unique and timeless. Rock, pop, funk, and improvisation. And that's at doors open at 7 p.m. each night, and the show gets started at 8 p.m. It's a 21 and older show, live from The Hive. For more information about Big Something tonight and tomorrow night. There is an Alzheimer's support group, as there is on the first and third Thursday of every month. That's at the Sandpoint Senior Center, with free respite care at the Daybreak Center next door if you call in advance for reservations, 265-8127. That's from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. today. Speaking of support groups, the Bonner General Health Community Hospice Adult Grief Support Group meets to share stories and feelings and support one another in an understanding and caring environment.
And I've got something coming up on Saturday, the Bonner County History Museum at 611 South Ella. It's first free Saturday. Everyone is invited to enjoy the museum free of charge. And if you haven't been there, go. And it's this Saturday, the 7th.
I haven't been in a while. I wonder what's new.
Well, there's only one way to find out, young man.
We will have to. I will have to go check that out.
The Bonner County History Museum, free first Saturday.
We are nearly out of time. There's an Idaho Native Tree Identification class tomorrow. Distinguish between Idaho's trees can be a daunting task, but through a combination of images and live samples, a three-hour workshop from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. in the University of Idaho Extension office is going on tomorrow. That's located at the Bonner County Fairgrounds, I should say. You are supposed to pre-register, but call 263-8511 for more information. There's a bunch of live music going on tomorrow night. We don't have time to list it all.
Go to Sandpoint Online, and you can find through their entertainment calendar. As always, with every weekend, plus during the week, there is always something to do here in North Idaho, and this is a community that is so talented with musicians and plays and on and on. So support the community. Get out and do things.
Doors at 6:30, and the show is at 7 tonight at the Heartwood Center.
At the
correct? Tomorrow night. I'm sorry, tomorrow night and the night after that.
Yes.
That's right. That for Shakespeare's Twelfth Night.
I just want to give a quick shout out to the magic of technology. I have had a sister and a brother-in-law listening to us in Arlington, Virginia. They say, Alexa, 88.5 KRFY, and bammo, there we are. So
where I want to know, I'm looking forward to hearing who's listening next week, Jim.
Amsterdam, and we've had Genzano di Roma, south of Rome.
Wow.
You know, that just, I'm just overwhelmed.
Yeah. All right. You're going to be in Billings this weekend?
I'm heading out right as soon as we go off air. I'm going to drive across the state. I've got a pass around Butte and a pass around Bozeman to be a little bit concerned about, but I got good music to tune into and listen and on my CD player. And I'm going to head to Billings for a week. I lived there for 24 years, and I'm going to see friends, check in with my brother, and get my taxes done.
You'll be back next week, though.
You bet. We've got a good morning show lined up next week. I think Eric Ridgway and The Room.
That's right. There's also next week on The Morning Show, Rich Del Carlo on Tuesday morning.
The Bird Man.
That's right. Birds in Spring. Landscaping for birds as well. That's at 8 on Tuesday. On Wednesday, local decision primary 2018 continues. Republican candidates for District 1, Seat A. That's at 8 a.m. on Wednesday, April 11th. Thanks for listening to The Morning
Show.
You
have a good week, Jack, and we'll be back together.
We'll see you. Stay tuned for Bird Note and then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long here on 88.5 KRFY Ponder A.